Another series finale dropped and another bone to pick with the Cardinals offense lately. And what's the deal with the frequency of Mason Wynn's off days to begin the season? Coming up on B-Shafe Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome into this edition of B-Shafe Daily. Brendan Schaefer with you. It is the evening hours of Sunday, April 14th, 2024. I think yesterday I may have described it as Saturday, April 14th, because it was already after midnight by the time I started recording, and then I looked at the calendar or the date on my computer, and it said 14, so I went with it. I know, nothing like a bit of boring housekeeping to start the show, but nothing I could say here could be as boring as what the Cardinals offense did on Sunday against Zach Gallen and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Cardinals lose the series finale in Arizona 5-0. Cardinals have now dropped five consecutive series finales to begin the season, each of the last three being rubber games that the Cardinals have lost. So they're 0-5 in the final game of a series to begin the year. I don't know what that means, but I do recall that early on in the 2023 season, this was a topic of conversation, and I can even remember asking Ollie Marmol about it at one point because it had gotten to be really a glaring situation. I don't remember if it was like they were 0-8 or 1-8 or something like that in series finales, and they just couldn't win the last game of a series. And it felt like something that needed to be asked, but it's also kind of a hard thing to quantify. Ollie Marmol's answer to the question, I don't remember specifically, but was something to the effect of all the games are going to matter. All 162 of them matter. It's not just the last game of a series that matters. The first game will matter, the middle game will matter, etc. So it's just one of those questions that for a manager, probably not easy to answer, but fans, I certainly think, like it to be asked and want to know if there's a perspective on why the manager feels the team hasn't been able to close out series. I don't know if this was something that was asked of Ollie Marmol tonight or this afternoon, rather, in Arizona. I'm not out there on the road trip. I'm here at home in the St. Louis area, but it is something that I thought, I don't think they've won a series finale yet. And then I went back and made sure that that was right. Then fired off the tweet right before getting started here with the podcast this evening. But yes, the Cardinals have not won a series finale. And I think in the case of Sunday's loss, a lot of Cardinals fans, at least on social media, were pitting that on Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol for some of the lineup changes that were made Sunday. I wholeheartedly disagree with it, and I'll talk about that and why that is tonight on B-Shafe Daily, although it's not too terribly more complicated than the Cardinals scored zero runs, so changing out a guy or two in the lineup, to me, is not going to suddenly turn you from a 5-0 loss to a 6-5 win, but nevertheless, it was a topic of conversation. And the guy that I think most fans are focused on, and understandably, for a lot of different reasons, is Mason Wynn, who has been pretty consistently seen some days off to begin this season. So we'll talk about Mason Wynn, the off days where we're seeing Brandon Crawford in the lineup, why we think that might be, and what Ollie Marmol had to say about it, because that's the biggest question I saw on social media. Why is Mason Wynn sitting again? Well, Ollie Marmol was asked about it because, contrary to the belief of what I think sometimes the anger on social media can dictate, the questions do get asked. And I didn't have to look very far to find the answer, at least the comments, right, from Ollie Marmol. It might not be an answer that we like, and it may not even be the full answer, because there are times where something gets said that it's not necessarily a mistruth, but it may not be all of the detailed information as to why a decision gets made, but you're getting the general gist of it. And I think in this case, for me, it's enough. I'll understand if Cardinals fans say it's not. And I'll even admit that in this instance, with the way that Mason Wynn has started the season so productively for the Cardinals, I can see being annoyed by this. I even said, as somebody who's not really invested, right? I'm invested in the team because I watch it every day and talk about it every day and write about the team. I'm invested in what's going on, and of course, I'd prefer for the Cardinals to do well because it's interesting, right? It's better for business. The Cardinals are doing well. You guys are a lot nicer and happier when the Cardinals are doing well, but as I've said for many years on this show, I did grow up a Cardinals fan, but now I'm in a position in my career and in my adult life at this point where the winding road that I have taken to here, the Cardinals losing doesn't ruin my day. Not like it used to when I was a kid, when I was in high school. Cardinals, you can ask anybody that knew me back then. Cardinals could ruin my day with a loss. Now it's just different. Now I think, okay, how do we talk about this? How do we write about this? How do we present this and evaluate and analyze this? It's just a completely different perspective. I don't know if that's very interesting to hear, but I also like to kind of reiterate that and repeat that from time to time on the podcast for people that are new or for people that may not know and may not have heard me say something like that before. They might say, well, who's this guy and why is he talking about it? Well, I write about the Cardinals for KMOV. That's my job. I have another job hosting a radio show in mid-Missouri. So we talk about the Chiefs on the other side of the state. When it comes to football season, we talk a lot about the Cardinals as well. I'm a huge Mizzou fan. Like, I went to Mizzou. That's the fandom I have left, and nobody will take that away from me. Because it does. It kind of saps you of your fandom, and people don't believe this. I've had people in my family go, okay, yeah, but you're still a Cardinals fan, right? I'm like, I don't know how to explain this to you that the answer to that question is no at this point. I don't know how else to articulate that, because it is a bit of a weird concept to wrap your head around, but it is where I stand here in my current station of life. If you can get down with that and get down with listening to a podcast hosted by somebody with that perspective, make sure you hit that subscribe button in the lower right-hand corner on YouTube and follow B-Shafe Daily, the podcast, on Spotify as well. But the reason I bring all of this up and I go on a two-minute side quest, which I tend to do from time to time as well, stream of consciousness, don't expect me to be always buttoned up and bullet points of what I'm going to talk about. I try to do that at times because it can be effective, but other times I just end up sort of talking, and that's a bit of where we are tonight. But the reason I explained all of that in the first place was relative to this Mason Wynn situation. I can see how it would be annoying to Cardinals fans. And again, as someone who's not really invested in the same way that you guys are, I'm annoyed by it. I'm thinking the same thing you're thinking. Well, this guy's 22 years old. He's having a great start to the season. You're meaning to tell me he has to sit one of every four games, basically? And if you go back, he sat one game in the Dodgers series. That was a four-game series. He sat the third game of the San Diego series, but did come in late in the ninth inning of that game. I think it was as either a pinch runner or defensive replacement. He did not take a plate appearance in that game. Miami series, he played all three. Philly series, he played the first two games and then sat. So that was a little bit of a longer stretch of consecutive games. But now in the Arizona series, he plays the first two, and then Mason Wynn is sat on the final game of that series. Why is that, and how much of an impact did it have today, and how much of an impact do we think it'll have moving forward? That's what I want to be able to tackle here on this podcast. And then we'll get into any of the other elements of this game that seemed particularly relevant. From a pitching perspective, Miles Michaelis had it cooking for a little while. I guess we can do that part first. He looked like he was pretty strong until he faded out in the fifth inning. The fifth innings have been problematic for the Cardinals over the last few days, and it was another case for Miles Michaelis. He was charged with five runs in the fifth, and I think Andre Pallante was technically on the hill for some of those runs coming in to relieve Miles Michaelis, but Pallante ended up not allowing an earned run of his own, though he did allow three hits. I think he came in with the bases loaded. And then how about Ryan Fernandez? 2 1/3 innings, gets the ERA down to 3.18. That was a nice job of filling the innings for the Cardinals there. I understand that it's not glamorous and not sexy, but when the Cardinals aren't going to be even remotely involved in a game, and they weren't today when you lose 5-0. I know you were involved in the first 4.5 innings, but once Arizona scored five, it was like, okay, Zach Gallen's going to get a W for this game, and it's about all she wrote. For Fernandez to be able to run it out the rest of the way, 2 1/3 innings, and not give up any hits, just one walk, that's pretty good. I'm very intrigued to see how Ryan Fernandez will continue to develop and whether he can turn into somebody that Ollie Marmol trusts a little bit more. Obviously, you need guys that can mop things up in garbage time. Will there be moments where Ryan Fernandez is called upon to do more than that this season? I think the answer to that is yes, and he acquitted himself well today. Again, with the ERA down to 3.18, he's had some games where he's given up some runs, but I think he's filling the role that he's been asked to fill to this point. I know folks are not happy with Pallante. The story with Andre Pallante is going to be the same as it ever was. He's going to go in there, and you're looking for a ground ball, and a lot of times he's going to get it, and if it does get caught, it looks like Andre Pallante stinks. you can maybe have an argument that if that's your one skill, basically, is to induce the ground ball, the most important thing is going to be the infield defense. And I do think the Cardinals have a pretty good infield defense. Gorman has gotten a lot better as a second baseman. I think he's at least a league average second baseman, at least to my eyes, maybe even better than that. I don't know what the metrics say about what he's done so far this year. Kind of hard to figure what the metrics actually mean, though, too, through just about a couple of weeks of a season. Give me more of a sample size there. But Mason Winn, when he's at shortstop defensively, I know he wasn't today, is a very solid toolsy defender. And, of course, you have Goldie and Arenado at the corners. Now, I would say, does it make as much sense to bring Pallante in when you have Brandon Crawford as your starting shortstop? I almost do believe that that should be a consideration. If your plan is bring in a guy that's going to induce ground balls, but your infield is not at its full strength defensively, that might not be as effective of a strategy. I also think in this case, with there being two outs in the inning and the bases loaded, it's not like a double play was a necessity. You didn't necessarily need a ground ball pitcher. You could have made a case for a strikeout pitcher in that moment. And Andre Pallante ends up giving up the ground ball. And then there was a wild pitch later on before he gets another ground ball. And this one ends up being the final out to end that fifth inning, mercifully, finally, right? But it's interesting because it was a 2-0 game when Pallante came in. I think you could make the case for a different arm in that spot. I prefer Pallante when it is maybe a double play situation. And yes, Ducks are going to be on the pond, and that might make you uncomfortable because Cardinal Nation doesn't trust Pallante right now. But I do think there is utility to the role that he can fill there. But I also would say, can you line it up with where it makes the most sense? And I'm sure that there was maybe a matchup-oriented reason for Andre Pallante there against Corbin Carroll. Obviously, Corbin Carroll, a left-handed hitter. Historically, Andre Pallante, despite being a right-handed pitcher, has those reverse splits where they maybe thought the matchup was conducive. But Carroll jumped right over the first pitch that he saw, and it was hit sharply to the right side. It didn't end up impacting things that it was Brandon Crawford at shortstop, but I bring it up just because I do think generally strategic-wise that is something to consider. I'd like to see if it's going to be Pallante for mopping up a middle-inning situation with Ducks on the pond. Have it be an obvious ground ball situation, maybe even only having one out so that the double play is the obvious thing that you need, and a good matchup to induce that ground ball. That's probably where you can find the most success with Andre Pallante. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the defense has got to be, you'd like to have your best defense out there. And I think in the case of today, the Cardinals obviously did not, even though I'm acknowledging that the ground ball that was hit by the left-handed bat did go to the right side of the infield. Gorman dove, couldn't quite snare it. It was hard hit. The pitch was left kind of up middle of the zone. So it just was what it was from that perspective for Pallante today. I said I was going to talk Mason Winn, though, and I am going to do so. I didn't want to go win and then kind of just end with a little peter out on the conversation about the pitching. So that's basically the conversation about the pitching. I'm not going to even do the like soft contact thing when it comes to Miles Michaelis because it frankly doesn't matter. You know he's going to have the ball put in play against him. He's going to have to not give up the level of contact that he does and have the big inning be able to bite him. And the walks are going to kill you. When you're a pitcher like Miles Michaelis, you absolutely cannot have a couple of, you know, back-to-back walks within that inning to Tucker Barnhart and Ketel Marte. That's pouring gasoline on a fire if you're Miles Michaelis in a potential big inning for the opponent. Yeah, that's kerosene, my friend. Can't have that happen. So that's the evaluation of Miles Michaelis today. He was good till he wasn't. Nice enough job by the bullpen, although I can understand folks are tired of seeing Pallante go out there and give up runs. But I'm not going to focus too much on that. Let's get into this Mason Winn thing. As we did a little bit, we were breaking down the frequency of his games, and it's been something that has been a concerted effort, it has seemed, to get Mason Winn some extra days off. It's not really been a topic of conversation with other players to the extent that it has been Mason Winn. We've heard it more about Winn, and we've seen it more with Winn than I think anybody else in the lineup. Right? We've seen days where Wilson Contreras wasn't behind the plate, but then he got the injury, he had the hit-by-pitch on the back of the hand, so then it was almost inevitable that you're going to have Ivan Herrera get some run behind the plate. I don't really think we've seen the, hey, this guy needs a blow, which just means a day off. We haven't really seen that with a lot of the other players compared to how often it's happened with Mason. But Holly Marmel was rightfully asked about it. I can't credit who asked the question because, like I said, not out there in Arizona, but I can credit John Denton of MLB.com who put the response in his story. And he said, Cardinals manager Holly Marmel said the club is trying to keep 22-year-old healthy over the entire season. From Holly Marmel, quote, Mason needs a day. We talked about it and his body can use it. He's swinging it well, playing good defense and running the bases. He's doing everything you would want him to do. But in conversation with him, today would be a good day for him to have it off. This is going to be a long season for him, and keeping him fresh will be important. Our conversation has been good, and we agreed that today would be a good day for him to rest. That was the full quote, at least in the entirety of what John Denton used in his story regarding Mason Wynn getting the day off once again for what it feels like maybe the fourth time already this season. I went through it, but it happens here in Arizona, happened in the final game against Philly, happened in the final game against San Diego, and the final game against the Dodgers. So, yeah, that's four times. And we mentioned off the top of the show today, the Cardinals are 0-5 in series finales. The only series finale that Mason Wynn did play in, ironically enough, was the one that was over before it ever began because Kyle Gibson gave up the six runs at the first inning. So I don't know about correlation versus causation for that whole deal, but if it is to be said, so it be, so it is, in the infinite wisdom of Gregory Hirsch. I finally am in season four of Succession, by the way. Absolutely my type of show. Excited to see how that thing wraps up. I know that everybody that has seen the show probably saw it wrap up last year, but I'm the kind of guy that waits till a show is over, and then I go, hey, I should probably watch that. It's exactly what I've been doing for the past few months. Anyway, it is to be said that Mason Wynn has not played in many of these series finales, and those are the games the Cardinals are consistently losing. So take that for whatever it is. Mason Wynn has played really well when he has been in there. 349 average, 356 on base, and we've even seen a little bit of a power breakout from him with a couple of triples and a double so far this season. No homers yet, but that's okay. Pretty decent on the strikeout rate. He's got nine of them in 47 plate appearances. So you map that out to 100 plate appearances. What does that get you to? Close to 20 times it by six. You know, you're talking 115, 120 strikeouts in a season. Probably something that he would say he wants to make sure he doesn't strike out quite at that rate, but it wouldn't be the end of the world if he did. I think with a guy like Mason Wynn, you do, and this applies to Victor Scott too, you just want these guys to be able to put the ball in play as much as they possibly can because you can gain some benefit from that. You can steal hits whereas other guys won't. With their speed, they're able to do that from time to time. So the fewer strikeouts, the better for a guy that's got great wheels. I think that sort of goes without saying. But then it begs the question, if Mason Wynn is swinging it so well and he's looking pretty good defensively, he's made an error, you know, it's not the end of the world, but he's looked really, really good. He's been very impressive, especially when you compare and you look back at the way things went for him last year in that brief cup of coffee that he had in the big leagues at the end of the year. 37 games, 137 plate appearances. He had 172 with a 230 on base and a 238 slug. Basically no power, wasn't walking much, and certainly wasn't hitting much. And we're just seeing a different, more confident version of Mason Wynn. He's got 15 hits in 14 games compared to 21 hits in 37 games when he came up at the end of last season. I think that was to be expected too, by the way, when you think about Mason Wynn, and this is something that he talked about back at winter warmup and has acknowledged since then. If you look at his numbers at each level where he gets an opportunity to be promoted to an additional level, and this was true all throughout the minors for him, there had been a little bit of an adjustment period, and then he starts to grow into it and get acclimated, and then he takes off. And that seems to be what's happening here for Mason Wynn too. Cardinals fans have noticed it. They've been very fond of the performance of Mason Wynn. The thing they don't love is Holly Marmel continuously taking him out of the lineup. And I don't think it helps either that when Mason Wynn is taken out of the lineup, the guy that's put into the lineup is Brandon Crawford, who at this point, he's only had 11 at-bats, so I'm not going to go crazy with this. But it seems as though the struggles that Brandon Crawford had last year, the decline, he seemed to really hit a wall within the last couple of seasons. It seems like that's continuing. And that maybe, although the Cardinals thought in 2023 The reason for his struggles was injury related, which he did go through a number of injuries. And when they brought him in, they said it's okay because we're going to be able to keep him healthy and keep him fresh because we're not going to play him as a starter the way he had done for his entire career. I don't know. What is he now after today? 1 for 11, I think, when it comes to, yeah, he went 0 for 3 with a K today. So what is he? He's 1 for 11. He's had 13 plate appearances, a couple of walks. He's hitting 091 or whatever it is now. And no real power. And defensively, I think he's kind of in the spot in his career where the balls that are hit to him, he's a sure-handed player and he's going to make the play. The range factor isn't very great. You can recall the play. I want to say it was that final game of the San Diego series where it was a ground ball that seemed like it would have been a tailor-made double play ball if it were Mason Wynn or almost anybody else out there. And Brandon Crawford just simply couldn't get to it. And his feet were moving a little slow. The jump was slow. He stretched out, dove, tried to corral the ball, and it rolled into center field to continue an inning. That's where the Cardinals are at, and I feel like that's where Cardinals fans are at when it comes to this Mason Wynn thing. The comparison from the athletic, vibrant, ascending Mason Wynn to a Brandon Crawford that I feel like everybody has sort of made up their mind about him at this point, and I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm also not saying it's necessarily completely fair, just given the small sample. But it does seem to track that sample with what the numbers dictated from Crawford last year when he also had really, really poor defensive metrics too. So this is a guy that's won a number of gold gloves in his career. He's a four-time gold glover. He's a three-time all-star. He's won a silver slugger in his past. But at age 37 now, the skill set seemingly has declined. And for the Cardinals, they really were okay with that. That's what they sort of wanted, was the sure-handed guy who can handle the shortstop position when Mason Wynn needs a breather. I just don't know if Cardinals fans expected that breather to play out four times in the team's first 16 games or whatever. Yeah, the Cardinals are 7-9. So that's 25% of the games so far that Brandon Crawford has started. And now, there was something said, I want to say back during the homestand to this effect, and it might have even been prior to that when the Cardinals were still in San Diego, where Ollie was asked, yeah, you kind of rest in Mason Wynn a couple of times. And he said, look, this is part of the plan. This is what it's going to look like, especially early on. A combination of reasons for that. The Cardinals want to keep Mason Wynn fresh, and they also want to keep Brandon Crawford kind of in the game, so to speak, because he's a guy who has his entire career been a starter, and to just basically not play him at all, you figure that when he does have to go into a game or he does need to be used in a sparingly sort of way, that he might not be fresh or connected enough with the game to be able to produce. Now, that process has played out to the effect of the Cardinals playing him one out of every four games, and he hasn't hit at all so far, so I don't know that you can say that that strategy is working to keep Brandon Crawford effective with this team. And defensively, again, to my eyes, I haven't been super impressed with what I've seen so far, acknowledging that it is a small sample to this point. All of those things are what they are. I think as the season moves along, what that would indicate is that because Ollie Marmol said, hey, for a player like Brandon Crawford, who has been a full-time guy, we want to, especially early on, kind of make sure he stays involved. That would dictate to me or suggest to me that that's going to wane as the season goes along a little bit, which would likely coincide with Mason Wynn seeing more consistency in terms of his time in the daily lineup. For right now, it definitely does seem as though the Cardinals are protecting Wynn and they're managing his workload in a very intentional way. The sense I get is that's not going to be the case necessarily the entire season, but it is right now, and I can see the frustration from fans for that. Like, okay, it's April right now. It's not like it's the dog days of summer. It's not like it's August. It's not like it's hot out. They played with a closed roof today in Arizona, so it's not as though the sun's beating down on you, and that would be the reason to give them a blow today. So in the minds of many Cardinals fans, what gives? Why would Mason Wynn need this level of frequency of off day? So a couple of things to respond to that, and I know it's been a common question out there. First of all, like I read, Ollie Marmol said there's been consistent communication and conversation that's been good and productive, and that we agreed today would be a good day for him to rest. Mason needs a day. His body can use it. Listen when a manager talks. I know that sometimes it just seems like you should gloss over everything that Ollie Marmol says because in your mind, he's full of crap and he's lying and all this stuff. I've seen what some folks have said out there and kind of the way those conversations go in the minds of fans. But I think there is often purpose behind what the manager is saying. And if he's saying, look, we talked about it and his body can use it, he's doing everything that you'd want him to do, but maybe to keep him that way, going to be a long season for him, keeping him fresh will be important. These are the quotes from the manager about the player, and he says that both sides are in agreement with the plan that they are using right now to keep him fresh. It may not seem like something the 22-year-old rookie needs because he's, like I said, young, vibrant, exciting, ascending. All of those things are true. And if he's been their best hitter, which he has been, and it's a team that's kind of starved for offense right now because you'll score 9 one day, but then you'll score 2, and then you'll score 0, and it's the same damn thing that we have been harping on for years when a man named Albert was not only on the team, but he was the hitting coach, Jeff Albert. The other guy was Albert Pujols. I did the little bait and switch. Y'all thought Jeff Albert was the worst, right? Because it was always the feast or famine mindset of the way these series would often play out. The Cardinals could score 9 or 12, but then what happens the next day? Save them for tomorrow. Save some runs for tomorrow. It's not really how it worked, but that's the tricky part of this 2024 Cardinal team. The way they built this pitching staff to have guys like Michaelis and Gibson and Lance Lynn, and in a different way, Steven Matz. Some of those guys, like Matz, you think are going to go 4.5, 5 innings most of the time. Maybe not get too deep into the game. So those days you'll strain the bullpen. The other days, though, when Lynn and Gibson are going, the idea is that those guys are supposed to be able to get you deeper. Miles Michaelis is supposed to be able to get you deeper, but he's going to eat it along the way. He's supposed to maybe get through 6 or 7, which I get that today they pulled him in the 5th. But he's maybe sometimes going to have to eat it. Kyle Gibson, when he went 6 innings and gave up 4 yesterday, he's got to get through those 6. Lance Lynn's supposed to get you through those 6 so that you can keep the bullpen a little bit more rested for the days that maybe it's a Steven Matz start, or it's like today a Michaelis start that doesn't go the way you thought it would and you need to dip into the bullpen a little earlier. That's the way they decided to build this pitching staff and this rotation. That was their choice, to go out and target these types of pitchers, which is okay. But what you know is that those guys' ERAs are going to be about 4, 4.5, maybe 4.75. That's kind of what you're expecting from a number of the folks in this rotation. I would say between Michaelis, Lynn, and Gibson, an ERA between maybe Michaelis, he's had years where he's been below 4 for sure. He's been all-stars in those seasons. But if it's 3.9 to about 4.8, that's your range of sort of expected outcomes between Michaelis, Lynn, Gibson, that's okay. That's how they built it, though. And they shouldn't really expect much more than that from those guys. Maybe Lynn's able to exceed that. I certainly think it's possible. He's at like 2.63 right now. But Gibson's got an ERA over 6. And, you know, Michaelis has a high ERA at this point after getting beat around a little bit today. Need to check exactly what the ERA is. 5.82 for Miles. So these things are just realities of what this Cardinals team is going to be. And again, it's kind of what you expected when you signed these players. I don't think you could have reasonably said, oh, our rotation, we've mapped it out. You know, Sonny Gray is going to have a 2.8 ERA again, which maybe he will. He did last year. But then behind him, Michaelis is going to go from a 4.5 or whatever it was, 4.7. He's going to go down to a 3.6. And Lance Lynn had a 5.8 ERA or whatever it was, but he's going to be a 3.5, which maybe he will be. Actually, of all the guys that we're talking about to exceed expectations, I think Lynn is a great candidate to do that. And we've seen really good stuff from him, and he's still showcasing strikeout stuff. But then Gibson, I know his ERA was 4.7 last year, and historically he's basically a 4.5 ERA guy. We think he's going to have a 4.1 ERA. Like, I don't think the Cardinals were doing that. I think they were internally, you've got to be realistic. For as much as some Cardinals fans think they don't know baseball, I think they have a general idea of what's reasonable to expect from this rotation. You've admitted, basically, by signing the guys you signed and knowing their track records, what to expect from the offense in order to have a successful team. You have said you have set up a rotation and a pitching staff that inherently admits that you need to score 4 or 5 runs a game in order to succeed, and that's kind of almost be the minimum. You have to be one of the top-rated teams in the league in the percentage of games that you score at least four. If that's like a mission statement, I think it would make sense for the way they built this Cardinal team. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. That's not me saying they're accomplishing this goal. I'm saying in the offseason, with the way they built this sucker, that almost needed to be part of the mission statement. Is, well, we don't have an offense that can really afford to not give us four or five runs every game, which is not going to happen every game. But more often than not, we're almost going to have to, because there's going to be a lot of games where the other team, the team that we're facing, is going to end that game with a number four or number five in their run column. It's going to happen more often than it's not going to happen. And I know that's probably a pretty standard amount for a team to score, like four runs. So I'm not necessarily, you know, poo-pooing that, because other teams might give up four a bunch too. But you kind of figure for the Cardinals, man, with the way they're built, they've got a bunch of guys that we kept touting the quality start. They're going to go six innings and give up three. Sometimes it'll be six innings and give up four. And the bullpen hopefully is rested enough to not give up too many, but they'll occasionally slip up because no bullpen ends the season with a zero ERA. But if you look so far for the Cardinals, they gave up five runs exactly twice in the Dodgers series. They gave up, they had a great pitch series in San Diego where they gave up two, two, and three, but still didn't sweep that series despite the great pitching that they got, which is a, you know, a black mark on the offense for that series. You needed to sweep that series with the pitching that you got. Against the Marlins, they gave up five, and then they got blown up on Sunday. That happens, but they pitched well on Saturday. Phillies series, 5-3 loss, 4-3 loss within that Phillies series. The one game that they did win, they still didn't score four runs. The Cardinals won it 3-0. That was the Sonny Gray game. And now you're here in Arizona. They lose 4-2 and 5-0 in the two losses that they have. That's like more than half the games that they've given up either four or five runs. Like I said, maybe that's not that special. Maybe other teams do that. But certainly with the way this team is built, I think you could have seen that coming. This team needs to get four or five runs after nine innings to match that, and then maybe you'll send some games to extra innings and try to find a way to be a productive offense there. That's the way they're built. They're not doing that right now. They scored zero runs today. It's an offense-wide problem. It's a lineup-wide problem, and it's not specific to me. I'm still going to circle this back to Mason Winn. It's not specific to me to who is or isn't hitting in the eight hole in the lineup, which is basically where Mason Winn's been batting when he's been having all of this success. Brandon Crawford being in there today instead did not cost the Cardinals this game. I understand that Brandon Crawford came up with ducks on the pond and didn't come through, and that ended up costing the Cardinals. But I also think it's probably disingenuous to assign that Mason Winn would have automatically come through in that spot. He's been fantastic, and his average is .350. That still means he gets a hit only 35% of the time. More often than not, he doesn't. Striking out in that spot when you just needed to maybe put the ball in play, give your team a chance to do something, was a problem, and that's what Brandon Crawford did. I understand the frustration with it. I still maintain that the lineup decisions, and people are also saying, well, Victor Scott was out of there, and they put Ciani in there instead, and his average is 100. I legitimately got people telling me that they couldn't afford to start Michael Ciani because this game was too important because they needed to win it, to win a series. Ciani hasn't started much at all. I think this was his first actual start this year. And Victor Scott's played every game. He needed a day off. And he still did come in defensively late. But to me, Victor Scott absolutely needed a time to have be off his feet. I get it. He's 23 years old. He's a young kid. But we're talking about it with Mason Winn. With Victor Scott, it's like, well, yeah, you need to get him back in there too. Well, he's played every game. Mason Winn has played not every game. He's played 75% of the game, and he was off on Sunday, and people were upset about it. I understand the Cardinals probably, they would have had a better chance to win if Winn was in there than if Crawford was in there, because Winn's a better player. But I don't know that Winn alone, batting eighth in this Cardinal lineup, would have bridged the gap. And if you really do believe that he would have, if Mason Winn is the difference as the eight-hole hitter between the Cardinals scoring zero runs, or if he's in there, instead of being out of the lineup, scoring enough to beat the Arizona Diamondbacks, who scored five against you, then that's a bigger indictment of the lineup than I think we're comfortable giving at this point. And maybe you're comfortable giving it because you've decided the lineup's no good. doesn't look very good so far this season. It's going to need to be good. Like I said, don't assign to me that I'm calling this Cardinal offense a top 10 offense with the way the team is built. I'm saying that's what they need to be. I thought they were going to be pretty close to being able to do that. I also made the case before the season and in the early days of the season that they might actually need to be top 8, top 6, top 5 to actually contend. Unless this pitching staff keeps pitching above its head, punching above its weight the way that it kind of has done to this point. Today notwithstanding, Miles got into some danger there in the fifth inning, and that ended up affecting his overall line. But there's a world in which the pitching takes a bit of a dive, and then you need to ask even more of your offense. And so far, the offense hasn't yet, you know, there have been opportunities for this team to be above 500 right now instead of 7-9 with some of the pitching performances that they've gotten but have wasted. So imagine if the pitching starts to take a dive. Then you're really in trouble if the offense isn't producing. They're 23rd in OPS in Major League Baseball so far this season. I'll check on the runs scored. They're 21st in runs scored, tied for 21st with the Blue Jays. And there's a handful of teams below them that have played one or two fewer games, so they might have a chance to catch up. The Cardinals have not been a good offense so far this year. I don't think focusing on the fact that Mason Wynn wasn't in this game is the right approach, because I think it assigns a scapegoat to the overall problem of, if this overall offense doesn't get cooking, if the guys in the middle of this batting order that have to carry this team, we've already done that podcast. We did that. We put Nolan Arenado's face and Goldschmidt's face and Gorman's face on the thumbnail of the YouTube video and said the Cardinals' best hitters have got to be their best hitters. And it was great to see Gorman hit a couple home runs. Arenado had a big day on Friday. But Goldschmidt is still struggling. He'll come and go from Arizona without really making much of a mark. He's still hitting 193 and a 538 OPS. That's about 300 points lower than what almost has to happen for the Cardinals to be a good team this year. Arenado's at least got his up to 669 on the OPS. And his average is fine. He's hitting 273. Just need to see more power from him consistently. But Arenado's is about 150 points lower, if not more, than what the Cardinals needed to be a great team this year. It just has to happen. It's non-negotiable. Those two guys are, you know, the money is one thing, but they are making $65 million or whatever it is, 60, 65 combined. But beyond the money, it's just the way they're batting second and fourth in the lineup. Those are two of the most important prominent spots in the batting order. They have to produce. And if they don't, the team's going to, they're not going to win. They're not going to win enough games. And they're probably going to tear this thing down a little bit. It's going to be a modified teardown. It's really simple the way it will go. Goldschmidt's traded if he's got any value. Arenado's traded either in July with Goldschmidt or wait till November and find a landing spot for him and hopefully somewhere that eats the money. Hate to view it in those terms, but if he's a 669 OPS, which he won't be, He's going to continue to kind of come back to the career norms. Maybe not to what you're used to seeing from him, but I certainly think he's going to be better than he's been. But then it's a conversation like, well, trim the payroll back for a year. Gibson, Lynn, those were one-year contracts. They can walk. Maybe you replace them with internal options. Suddenly you've trimmed, you know, $85 million from the payroll just by snapping your fingers. And that's before even having to really trade anybody else. Those are, you know, Goldie's short-term right now because he's in the final year of his deal. Lynn and Gibson, same thing. Arenado's got more years on the contract, but I don't think if this turns into one that's a modified rebuild or retool, he may not have asked to be traded last July, but I think it might be a different story this time around. And that's only all if the Cardinals continue to struggle. But they're going to struggle if the offense doesn't produce. If this team does not have that top 10 offense, and maybe it's got to be even better than that, this Cardinal team is not going to get it done. So all of those things are what I would have preferred to see fans focus on, which again, you can fan how you want to fan. But the Mason Wynn thing, I think, is just trying to find one simple scapegoat thing because it, on the surface, doesn't make any sense. And so it's easy to get upset and mad about it and have that be the thing that you say, Ollie Marmol sucks and here's why. I just think, in my experience, and again, I wasn't in Arizona this weekend, so I don't know. I don't know beyond reading the quote in JD's story, John Denton for MLB.com. I don't specifically know beyond why could his body use the day off? Why is that the way that that Mason needs a day. What's the reason for that? Give me a little more. Well, Olin Marmol probably didn't want to give a little bit more, even if there was more to give, because who's gonna benefit from that, right? But I've also seen it happen before, where I've looked and said, now, why is this guy out of the lineup? How ridiculous. He hit a home run yesterday, or this or this. And then I get back to the ballpark, and maybe it wasn't something that was actually said because the manager doesn't want to give too much away. But I talked to another reporter who goes, yeah, you know, Ollie wouldn't really say it, but I kind of got the sense in the way he answered the question that this guy wasn't available, like he was going through a little something or whatever. I'm not saying Mason Wynn's going through an injury. I think it is as simple as what Ollie Marmol is giving you in the quotes that he's giving, which is he needs a day, his body can use it, keeping him fresh will be important. You think about the way it went for Mason Wynn last year, because like I know what you're thinking. Well, why would that be if he's 22 years old? Why can't he just be fresh and ready to go? Well, he played 142 games last year between Memphis and St. Louis. And prior to that, the most games that he had played in a single season was 119 in 2022. So he went from 119 to 142 because he played 105 with Memphis and then 37 with the Cardinals in the big leagues last year. That's a jump of about 20-some-odd games. And now you're looking at his first full MLB season. What's that number that the Cardinals have in mind? I bet that number might be a little lower than 142. It might be about 130. And right now he's on a pace that's going to only be about 120. But I think as the summer progresses, they're planning to pick it up a little bit more just to make sure he's got his legs under him and integrated. I also think an element of this is Mason Wynn talked at winter warmup this January about has he put on muscle, has he put on weight, he's trying to put on some more weight. He wanted to get up to 195, I think he said, because he tends to lose about 10 to 15 pounds during the season. And last year, listen to this, because this is very important as to what the reasoning might be behind this decision by the Cardinals. It's not that I know that this is what's going on, and it's not that I know that there's not something. Maybe he is dealing with a little bit of something, and they just don't have any benefit to put that out there. If it's just minor, they don't want to, you know, whatever the reason would be. I don't think that's the case. I think it could be as simple as what they're giving you, but I want to try to add the context to why that might be. He said in winter warmup in January, that he was down to like 165 pounds last year at the end of the year. When he lost that 10 to 15, he was in the 160s for weight by the end of the year. And keep in mind, when we saw him last year, the final 37 games that he played for St. Louis, that was, other than the first 14 games, when he got up to game 119, now he had tied his career high. The rest of it, the rest of the 23 games, or whatever that math comes out to be, was Mason Wynn playing beyond a level that he had ever played professionally in terms of just the workload that he had and the amount of games that were played. So to recap, he's stretching himself beyond what he's done so far, which is not like he's some hero for doing this. This is what is demanded of baseball players at the big league level, and he knows that. But he started the year in the minors. He came up to the big leagues. He was playing every day in St. Louis, failing, trying and failing, and hitting 172 and learning along the way, which he clearly learned a lot because he looks great this year. But he was doing those things, and then you lose weight during the season because it's a grind on your body and you're doing a lot of physical exertion and you're at a caloric deficit. Like, you're losing weight. He was into the 160s. So his goal was to put on as much muscle as he could in the offseason. And he did say in January it's mostly fat that he usually loses during the season because you get lean, which he's already a really lean guy to begin with. So that's why he wanted to try to get up to where maybe when he loses the weight this year, he drops to about 180. Now, I don't know for sure if he accomplished that goal. I haven't asked him. I remember hearing about it in January. I went back tonight and looked at the video to make sure I was remembering it correctly. But he said in a perfect world, him losing that 10 to 15 pounds will come from a place that starts around 190, 195 and gets him down to 180, 185 so that he's still strong and has everything that he's looking to have physically for the stretch run of the season. Now imagine a world in which the Cardinals heard him say that and have had internal conversations with him about, you know, just what they want to see from him, what he wants to see from him, and they're managing him thusly. What if it is that simple? Is it frustrating that this specific game, Brandon Crawford came up with a big situation and he struck out, and in your mind, he shouldn't have been in there because he shouldn't even be on the roster, which is not an actual Ollie Marmol decision. If that's your stance, that's okay. Point that ire toward John Mozeliak because he signed him. When the Cardinals signed Brandon Crawford, the reason I said it was a fine choice was because it gave clarity to a thing that they had said all offseason about Tommy Edman, which is that they wanted him to be free to play only center field and not be the backup shortstop. And I kept going, well, how is that possible? You don't have the other guy. Who's the other guy that's going to play short on this roster? You keep saying, well, maybe not for Brendan Donovan. We'd really see him, you know, second base. Maybe he's going to play corner outfield. They didn't seem too keen on it. I personally think probably Brendan Donovan could just do that role, especially now when you're talking about Lars Nootbaar being back and he's going to be in left field. You can play Gorman at second every day. Put Donovan at shortstop when there's a day off for Mason Winn so you can keep Ivan Herrera in the lineup more easily. Maybe Alec Burleson gets in the lineup, depending on lefty, righty, whatever it is. I'm not trying to dog Brandon Crawford here, but like we're seeing the same things. And it doesn't look like he is in the prime of his career at this point in time. I think the Cardinals just kind of went to that least lowest common denominator and said, this is a guy who's a veteran, who's played shortstop and knows the ropes. And that's what we want for this spot behind Mason Winn, because we don't think this guy's going to play a bunch. And I don't think he's going to play a bunch either, especially if the performance that we continue to see isn't strong. I think there will come a time where Mason Winn begins to siphon even more of that sporadic playing time from Brandon Crawford. But it, I mean, on the surface, you do look at that and go, well, is that really the best use of a roster spot? Perhaps not, but that's where the Cardinals are at. And it's not Aldi Marmol deciding who was the backup shortstop. I know a lot of people said it would hurt less if Brandon Crawford wasn't performing so poorly. It would hurt less to see Mason Winn have to have a day off. I get that, but that's the guy that's on the team to fill that role. That's a different conversation than the conversation of whether or not Mason Winn should be getting these days off. And once again, I tried to talk about it at the beginning. I don't know if I did a great job of articulating my own personal viewpoint. I do think it's a little bit much. When I was talking about not being a Cardinal fan, so I'm not invested in the same way that you guys are, I even said, I think it's kind of annoying. Even as somebody who's not invested in that way, it's like, yeah, just play the 22-year-old kid, right? He's playing well. He's riding a hot bat. Let's let him in there. But we don't know. Is there a world in which Mason Winn asked for the day off? I'm not saying he did. I would doubt that it is what happened. But when you get just a quote from a manager and you don't necessarily know what's going on inside, there might be something going on where on a given day he might say, yeah, I think this is something that I'm down with. Or maybe the team is steering the direction and Mason Winn's amenable to it, but it's maybe not his favorite thing. Or maybe he understands that they might get more out of him. He might get more out of him if he's able to pace himself a little bit so that he's got his legs under him before you really start to hit the stretch run, and then maybe he's playing every day more consistently. Like, all of these are possibilities. So I try to bring the context to both sides. Because on the surface, do I love it that Mason Winn's not in there every day? Not really. I think it would be better if he was. But that being said, could there also be another side of this where it kind of makes sense for the Cardinals to want to manage it? Because when you consider the kid that they saw at the end of last year, it was a kid playing game number 120, 121, 122, all the way up to 142 of his season at the big league level, and he was hitting 172. Is that correlation causation? Was he so, you know, worn down that that's why he wasn't performing? I don't know for sure, but they're the people that would know that. The Cardinals internally are the people that would have access to that information via the conversations that happened with him from toward the end of last season and then through the offseason. If anybody would know whether or not that's applicable here, it would be the St. Louis Cardinals. It would be Aldi Marmol. So I've offered a bunch of theories as to what kind of could be going on. I know what is going on is that the Cardinals are managing him carefully, and they want to manage him and pace out his playing time until it gets a little bit deeper, and then I think you're going to see him even more frequently. The exact specific reasoning behind that, do we know it for sure? No. Did I offer up like five or six different sort of angles as to what it could be? Yes. Please take each with a grain of salt and understand that this isn't me stoking a controversy of, well, Mason Winn asked to be out of the lineup or Mason Winn's dealing with an injury. None of those things are what I'm saying to be factual. I just think when we don't really know the ins and outs, and it's like I said, it's happened to me before that I've gotten back from there's a road trip and I get to Bush and then I hear mention of, well, yeah, Aldi kind of wouldn't say it specifically, or Mike Schilt wouldn't say it specifically, but yeah, we kind of got the vibe that this is what that was just by talking to somebody. You go, oh, okay. Yeah, so I had that. I was, you know, making a big stink about it, and I probably shouldn't have because I didn't know what I was talking about. Fans are welcome to do that. For me, sometimes I go, well, I feel a little bit guilty about it after, or just a little silly, if nothing else, because, well, if I'd have been there, I'd have had that information. That's why it is so important to be there, and that's why I hope you guys enjoy this podcast, because if nothing else, I do try to be there for as many of the home games as I can be. That might not be 81, but it's going to be, you know, 50, 55, 60, whatever it does end up being throughout a season. I'm popping in to try and at least bring a perspective. Obviously, that's for KMOV that I'm doing that work, but it also, I think, aids what I'm doing with B-Shape Daily and with the YouTube channel to be able to, if something glaring is going on, maybe I might be able to find out or ask a question that could lead toward more understanding. And so hopefully that is an angle that you guys as listeners feel has some value. And if you do, hit that subscribe button in the lower right-hand corner of the screen on this video. Hit like on the video too, just for me. And if you're a Spotify listener, B-Shafe Daily. You can search for the podcast, B-S-C-H-A-E-F-F Daily, and follow over there. Rate and review as well. I think we're very, very close to having 100 reviews on Spotify on B-Shafe Daily. I would love to get that up in over 100. Unless you're going to be one of those people that gives like a 3-star review, then don't even bother. If you're going 5-star, then you're cool. I say that all the time, and then I kind of feel like that's a little bit of a silly thing to say because I might be emboldening you to leave a bad review. But if you think it sucks, you should leave a bad review. But we're trying to do our thing here. Appreciate you guys for listening, for watching, as always. Break it down for me in the comments. What's your take on the Mason Wynn thing? I know a lot of Cardinals fans are going to come away from this going, I still don't even agree with what you're saying. Ollie Marble's dumb. Why would they sit him? I don't know. I kind of think it's annoying, too, that they're sitting him, but I'm stepping back from it for a moment to go, there might be a reason, you know? We're hearing enough from Ollie Marmol. The key words, the reading between the lines of keep him fresh, long season, good communication, but he needs a day. His body can use it. Sometimes his body can use it means the player even agrees his body can use it. And it's not the same as a guy being soft because he's 22 and asking out of the lineup. Because one, we don't know that that's what happened. But two, even if it did, there's a reason. And couldn't it be said that they're managing him in such an effective way to keep him fresh, double up on off days here and there as well, that he's able to perform because of it? And if that's the case, maybe they should be giving more opportunity for Victor Scott to take a day off and a guy who's just now going through what Mason Wynn went through last August, September. Vic is doing it for the first time, and he hasn't even played AAA before this. So I feel like it's a little bit irresponsible at times to, if you're going to manage Mason this way, to expect that Victor is just going to, you know, be able to play every day and not need some of that same sort of management and those between day opportunities to get some rest. And maybe the Cardinals have thought about that, but for all we know, there could be a different conversation going on with Victor where he prefers playing every day, or he says, oh, it's physically, there's not an issue with me doing it, and here's why. But I would also imagine that, like, Mason Wynn is a very athletic, fit guy, and if he was down to 160-something pounds last year at the end of the season, it's because it takes a toll on you, and there are rigors to this, and Victor Scott's out there running around probably even more than a shortstop would, playing center field, captaining the outfield. So those are elements of this that I think sometimes it's easy to go, he's got to be in the lineup because I looked at his batting average and he would offer a much better opportunity than Brandon Crawford to drive some runs home in the spot that they had. And maybe they would have had a completely different outcome to the game as a result. And all those things can be true on the surface, but there are times, and it is most of the time, that what you see at the surface is not ultimately what it is. There's a lot else going on. So that's my take. Do I agree with it? I think they should probably play Mason Wynn more than they have. Being off one out of every four games is a little bit much to me. And so, yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with Cardinals fans on that. I'm not in agreement with, well, that's why they lost the game and Ollie Marmol doesn't know how to make a lineup. No, like, I think it was good they got Ciani in there too for Victor, as I mentioned. I think it is one of those things that maybe you hope to see it siphon out a little bit differently as time goes. It's another one of those things that I've said, look, well, what about Donovan playing shortstop? What about, you know, again, if all you're getting from Brandon Crawford is kind of not a lot of range and an 091 batting average, which, again, he could have a 2-for-4 game the next time he plays, and it's a completely different conversation about what his season-long stats are offensively. But if this is sort of the version of him that you're going to get, like, Fermin could do that. heck, Thomas Tajasi would have been really interesting. But then the other side is, if he's only playing 40 games a year, Thomas Tajasi is not a fit for this major league roster right now. And they did play him a little bit at shortstop, which I was intrigued by in spring. But he needs to play every day because he's a guy with future upside potential to be like the Brendan Donovan or that type of player who, yeah, you may not know the specific position where he'll be every day, but he needs to be in the lineup every day. And at times you're going to see maybe a prominent role for Tajasi down the line. Like Donovan has worked his way into being the leadoff hitter and he should be every day. He's that good. So for as much as I kind of thought it'd be nice to see him get some looks at short because maybe then he can be that guy, I just don't think that that was a realistic way to use him either. All that being said, Crawford's here. He's going to play. I think another thing that I meant to mention but didn't as to why specifically this game, like, all right, why not have Mason Winn in there against Zach Gallen? Because Zach Gallen's a tough pitcher, and the Cardinals really would like to win a series finale and win this series. Like, that would make a lot of sense. Sit Mason Winn on Monday when you're going out to Oakland. They stink anyway. Part of it might be pitching matchups, right? They might believe that a left-handed bat, Brandon Crawford, might match up a little bit better against whatever Zach Gallen is able to do. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition, but maybe they thought it would. I don't know. I didn't get a chance to ask. But those are some of the other aspects. And the final one is, and you may not think this is valuable at all because they're running a major league team and this shouldn't matter, Brandon Crawford and his family have lived in Arizona for a long, long time because he did spring training there like every year when he was with the Giants. And his family might have been at the game, might have come to the series, and it might have been agreed upon that he was going to get to play one of these games. Because the whole damn thing that he said in spring training when he came was, my kids wanted to see me continue to play. So that was a chance where his kids might have legitimately had a chance to see him play. And for as much as that seems like maybe a trivial thing in the grand scheme of whether or not you play a certain guy in the lineup and try to win a baseball game, etc., there are people out there, man. These are people. And so I legitimately think that might have been part of it. I don't know. That's pure speculation. I didn't ask. I wasn't out there to find out. I didn't notice anything. If they interviewed the family during the game and I missed it because I was walking around or whatever, but that is maybe an angle on this as well. Whether you like it or you don't, I think that could have been a thing too. So let me know what you think, Cardinals fans, about the Mason Winn stuff, about the Brandon Crawford continuing to play, spelling Mason Winn. You probably think Mason Winn doesn't need the break. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he does. I don't know. I do think, though, this is one of those. Somebody presented it to me. I think it was Christopher on Twitter. He said, you know, you can't have it both ways. You can't say that you kind of agree with us that it's weird that Mason Winn's not playing as much, but that it's not all his fault and that he's not in the wrong. I'm like, well, I can have it both ways because very rarely in baseball is there a decision that is clearly, you know, 99% the right decision and the other one is wrong. It's a 1% decision if you make it. 99% of the time, this one will work. And if you make the other decision, it only works 1% of the time. Like if that was the choice, it would be easy to be a manager because you'd always pick the 99% thing. I think more often than not, these decisions are 50-50. Okay, how do we manage a player's usage? Well, if we don't use him as much, he obviously doesn't get to impact the game as much, but we might get more out of him if we... These are all thought processes that have to happen for a baseball club, not just the manager, but the higher-ups and everything that goes into... They're 50-50 decisions, and sometimes you're trying to tilt the scales of how can we make this a 55-45 decision where we believe in our hearts that we're in the or in our heads and in what the data tells us that we're on the 55% side of things to have success rather than the 45% side of things to have success. So it's not always just so simple as, well, this is the right decision and the other one's wrong. It almost never is. There's a gray area, and I think in this case with Mason Winn's handling, we're in that gray area. What do you think, though, Cardinals fans? Let me know in the comments below what you think the right way to go about this would be for the Cardinals. Do you, even if you don't agree with maybe some of the presentation of what the Cardinals could be thinking that I've provided here, some speculation that I've provided, do you understand that that might be where they're coming from and could make some sense even if you don't like it? Could that be your perspective? Or do you still just sit in the lane of it's ridiculous that they've got anybody but Mason Winn at shortstop and they need to stop it yesterday? Let me know in the comments below. Appreciate you guys, as always, for watching and listening on YouTube and on Spotify to Be Shafe Daily. That is going to do it for this edition of the show. We will talk to you next time on Be Shafe Daily. Peace.